going to be a very big learning session, Sean, because when I give your title, it is Sean O'Rourke, and he is a Director of Stormwater and Resiliency for the Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank and Chief Resilience Officer for the State of Rhode Island. And last week, you were with the governor as well as other officials over at CCRI Newport last Friday, and you were discussing all of that as well as key actions and investments to make Newport County and Rhode Island's residents, economy, infrastructure, health system, and natural resources more resilient in the impact of climate change. So first of all, good afternoon, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ryan.
All of that is a mouthful. So let's just start with what you do for the state of Rhode Island and what those long titles that somebody gave you mean.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me here today. Maybe I'll start with my infrastructure bank, my Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank title, which my role at the state is very much an extension of that role. So a little over four months ago, I was hired as the Director of Stormwater and Resiliency at the Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank. The Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank has been around for about 25 years, focusing on clean water as well as drinking water, state revolving fund, as well as investments across the state. About 5 years ago, the mission of the Infrastructure Bank was expanded with the help of Governor Raimondo as well as the state treasurer to include energy efficiency programs as well as brownfields. And that really has paved the way to start thinking about climate resiliency as well as green infrastructure investments across the state. At the Infrastructure Bank, we build, maintain, and improve the state's infrastructure through financing and funding opportunities, all through two primary goals, one of improving the economy, creating jobs, creating better deals for taxpayers through infrastructure investments, as well as protecting the environment. They recognized, as well as many others around the state, that there's a gap in sustainable funding and financing opportunities for climate adaptation and green infrastructure. So they brought me on about 4 months ago to really look for opportunities to accelerate investments around the state around climate adaptation.
All right.
And then about on September 15th, the governor signed an executive order launching a statewide climate resiliency action strategy, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, as well as launching my position as the chief resiliency officer, which is an extension of my role at the Infrastructure Bank.
So what are some of the things that the Infrastructure Bank or this new position, this new role, this new extension have accomplished recently that people might know about?
Sure. So right here in Newport, we worked with the city of Newport and the Newport wastewater treatment facility, helped fund and finance about $42 million worth of improvements to the wastewater treatment facility, hardening of pumping stations and managing wet weather flows. So when it rains and it's going to be raining more, what do we do with that constrained capacity at those facilities? As well as worked with another program at the Infrastructure Bank called the Efficient Buildings Fund, which helped finance a solar project at the Newport Wastewater Treatment Facility to reduce the emissions as well as provide renewable energy. It's actually the first wastewater treatment facility in the state to have on-site solar.
All right.
Some of the other programs we're working on are we've worked on Bristol Town Beach, where we provided green infrastructure financing to reduce beach closure days and starting to show now the revenues that were associated with reducing beach closures and increasing economic development.
So it seems like, and people can hear us all the way up in Providence, but it seems like a lot of this might get misconstrued that just being around maybe Narragansett Bay, but I have a feeling this kind of work is being done in every single city and town across Rhode Island.
Yeah, I appreciate that question because the hallmark and I think the mission of this statewide climate resiliency action strategy is about finding priority investments that the state can make to better protect our residents, our economy, our environment from a changing climate. And not just on the coast, not just on the bay, but also upland. There's been a ton of work that has been done already across the state, agencies, organizations, municipal partners along the coast about better preparing ourselves for severe weather. But there hasn't been as much coordinated effort upland. And we're starting to see that the impacts are just as great. 2010 storms, I would imagine that Mayor Fung mentioned the 2010 storms and the impact that had to the in Warwick. But we're also seeing that not only the coast is impacted, but also the upland. And so this statewide approach of holding roundtables, discussions with residents, also municipal officials and planners from across the state has been critical to understanding what are the priorities truly across the state, not just in one particular geography.
So last Friday was one of the roundtables. Yep. Tell me about these roundtables.
Yeah, so we're holding 10 roundtables across the state, and this is really the first piece of our work in identifying what those true statewide priorities are. So we've held six so far. The one in Newport, it was focused on Newport County as a whole. It was held here in Newport at CCRI. It's a terrific host. Really appreciate them working with us on putting on this event. It was also co-hosted by the Aquidneck Island Planning Commission. And we had great partners also from the University of Rhode Island, the Graduate School of Oceanography, and the Coastal Resources Center over at URI as well. We gathered about 75 community leaders, climate leaders, who have been working on these issues locally in Newport County for a long time, to identify a series of vulnerabilities. So we look at what we call climate stressors. What are people most concerned about? Is it rising temperatures? Is it increasing sea levels? Is it beach erosion? What are those slow-moving disasters so that when a storm does hit, the impact is greater? And then we also look at what are the critical assets locally that are impacted by those changes? Is it wastewater treatment plants? Is it downtown waterfront areas? Is it people's residents that are now flooding at high tide events, you know, just daily? So we're starting to identify what those priorities are, and we're doing that across the state. And the one here in Newport, the governor also came as well, and we were really happy to have her at this event. And I think it was a great show of really supporting all the work that's been happening in Newport County.
Before we get to what might have been discussed or brought up at CCRI last week, was this the first one? Was it in the middle of the pack? Where was this in the 10 that you're doing?
Yeah, so this was the sixth one that we did.
Okay.
So the ones that we've held so far, we held one in the greater Providence area at Save the Bay. We held one up in Smithfield as well, talking about Blackstone Valley area.
Very important part of the state.
Very important part of the state, and we're starting to see the major flood vulnerabilities as well that we're seeing up in that area. Held one down at URI Graduate School of Oceanography, the Westerly Community Westerly Ocean Chamber hosted one in Westerly, the Wood Pawcatuck Watershed Association in Hopkinton. So really a diversity of organizations and hosts as well as geographies.
And, you know, I know I could be in Smithfield in about 40 minutes or so. How different are the discussions from URI to Smithfield to Newport?
Extremely different. You put your finger on the pulse. We've learned a lot by doing these meetings. The first one looks very different from what we held last Friday. We found that it's really important to have an adaptive management strategy about not only the facilitation of how we're running the meetings in order to get the best data and input from our participants, but also understanding our audience as well. And coming at each of these meetings from the same perspective is not really going to address the audience all that well. So, for example, at URI, the Graduate School of Oceanography, we had people in the room who have been dealing with this on this work for, you know, 30 years, right? Deeply invested, data, scientists. And then we have other areas where there were mostly residents who were like, you know, I'm seeing this impact in my backyard. Thanks for coming to my neighborhood, my geography, to talk about this, not only holding meetings at URI or in Providence. So we're starting to see some common trends in what we're hearing, but we're also seeing a variation from upland, rural, urban, as well as coastal upland.
Excellent. And we'll continue this discussion and find out some of those trends and what was maybe some of the highlights of the Newport Roundtable when we come back here on What's Up Newp Radio Edition, 114, 56 degrees here in the city by the sea.
Where do the locals go? Broadway. Where is there fantastic food and entertainment every night? Broadway. So go where the food's great, the drinks are flowing, and the music is playing. Broadway. You'll see old friends and make new ones.
Malt is a Newport favorite with a seasonal menu and friendly atmosphere. Over 30 beers on tap, a large selection of single malts, bourbons, and Irish whiskeys, plus a creative cocktail list. Open nightly for dinner and Sunday brunch.
Caleb and Broad offers dining and nightlife with creativity and simplicity. Step up from bar food and a step down from fine dining with a funky, fun vibe. Open every night for dinner plus Sunday brunch.
Salvation Cafe is uniquely Newport with creative decor and a clever mashup of global fare, including great vegan choices and creative craft cocktails. Open 7 days. Great private dining space for parties.
The Fifth Element is trendy, hip, and always hopping 7 nights a week. The comfortable, stylish interior is the perfect spot for a night out with friends. And there's free parking. Check out the live jazz every Sunday brunch and Monday evenings.
See you in Newport tonight on Broadway.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. I actually don't even think about food. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad, does it attack belly fat? Well, let me tell you, it did. The second month is days where I saw a drastic change in the size of my stomach. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com or call 888-400-0435, 888-400-0435.
It's here, the Mercedes-Benz winter event at Vidi. That means amazing holiday savings on new and pre-owned Mercedes-Benz vehicles and Sprinter vans. And in the spirit of the season, Vidi is also giving you free pickup, free delivery, and a free new Mercedes-Benz loaner, anytime, anywhere. Sure, Vidi gives you the gift of time and convenience every day, and we have for nearly 50 years. We just wanted to put a bow on it. Vidi's Mercedes-Benz winter event, going on now. So call us at 888-BY-VIDI or visit Vidi.com today.
And welcome back. What's up, Noop Radio Edition? Here on a Tuesday, we are live, 56 degrees in Newport, and we're chatting today with Sean O'Rourke, who is the Director of Stormwater and Resiliency for the State of Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank and the Chief Resilience Officer for the State of Rhode Island. Got one of those mixed up a little bit there, but we get it. Resiliency is what we're all about, and you were down here last week, so that's 2 weeks in a row you made the trip to Aquidneck Island.
Yes.
You officially get some kind of badge or something for that, so last Friday as well as today. And you were talking about, you know, I want to really hit on, you're doing these 10 roundtables. We talked a little bit how different they are in Smithfield to down at URI and things like that. What is the state? What is your position? What are you looking to get out of that? And how are you going to use that?
Yeah, great question. So each of these roundtables is very much focused on, you know, hearing from the variety of partners that are in the room about what they're most concerned about locally, and then focus on what are the action items that we can make to better prepare ourselves for this changing climate. All of this work, we're not debating why climate change is happening. We're already taking the measurements of what we're seeing that is changing right now. I mean, we all know that, you know, we're Newport tidal gauge. We're seeing 10 inches of sea level rise in the last, you know, 40 plus years. We're seeing increasing temperatures of Narragansett.
And you can't argue those things. For the people that are on either side of climate change, that is statistic. That is like hard fact.
Yes. As our senator from this area likes to say, that we're not measuring these changes with, you know, complex instruments. We're measuring with thermometers and yardsticks, right? So we're just saying that this stuff, we're already seeing the impacts, and we have infrastructure and our people and our residents and economy that are already seeing impacts of this. So how can we better prepare ourselves for the changes that are occurring? I should go back, because this work is, we say climate change and preparing for climate change. There's two tracks that need to be worked on together. There's mitigation, right? There's how do we start to slow down the impacts of climate change? And the governor, as well as many others, have really provided some great leadership on, you know, putting greenhouse gas reduction targets in place. There's already great leadership happening in that space. This plan that we're developing, this strategy, is about action-oriented steps and investments that the state can make to better prepare ourselves for those changes that we're seeing. So we're focused completely on the adaptation side.
And the focus, how much of it is short term, we need to get this done now, or immediate, I should say, emergency, and how much is planning for the future?
Yeah, so we're mixing what I like to call low-hanging fruit and high-hanging fruit all at the same time. Each of the themes that we're starting to emerge, which we could talk about in a minute, have some already easily investable action items. And, you know, some of that work is already happening. We just haven't described it as resilience. But how can we start to package and stack investments for, you know, better preparing ourselves right now, as well as identifying what are those more visionary and what are those more long-term steps that we need to put into place to better prepare ourselves for 100 years from now. And we're going to identify those, but this strategy is very much focused on the adaptation investments that we can make now and that we can accelerate and better coordinate across agencies as well as all the actors across the state.
So 6 roundtables so far,
yep.
4 more, and we can get to later on maybe in the program of just where those are going to be or where
yep.
people can go for more information to find out those if they want to attend them. But what are the general themes across all 6 so far, and then maybe we can pick what the themes, how the themes have been different in all 6 of them.
Sure. Yeah, there's been maybe 6 or 7 themes that have emerged that are cross geography. You know, obviously you can imagine that some of the themes we heard here in Newport are different than, you know, Smithfield. But some of the common ones that we've heard are the vulnerability of the drinking water supply. And, you know, that's, I think, a good example of a theme that's emerging as a statewide priority. It just happens to manifest itself differently depending upon where you are. So, for example, here in Newport County, some of the vulnerability of the reservoirs that are right behind seawalls, right behind beaches, you think about those vulnerability of saltwater intrusion, water contamination, as well as what happens when a storm hits. Versus, say, in the western part of the state, in Hopkinton, a lot of people are in private wells. They're worried about prolonged drought and the reduction of the groundwater. That, you know, that reduces you know, their ability to have fresh drinking water. So we're starting to see themes like that. Another one is consistent emergency preparedness across the state. There's been a lot of work in some areas in about evacuation routes and also thinking about, you know, where are the emergency shelters and continuity of services when those storms do hit. Another one, such as flooding, coastal flooding here in Newport County, as well as upland flooding in the Blackstone Valley or the Patuxent River. We're starting to see commonalities of coastal and upland flooding as well.
So I guess, Sean, I'll ask you, I'll just pick one of them, but let's say flooding. Mm-hmm. So then how do you take that theme? You know it's going to be, it's becoming a constant theme. I believe that it's still going to be, such as the water, drinking water. You know, when you get to Scituate, that's obviously going to be a big one because that's where the Scituate reservoir is. So how do you take that flooding? Hey, we knew flooding was one. Hopefully everybody knew that flooding was going to be one, and that's why this started. But and then how do you take action on that?
Yeah, so as alongside these roundtables, you know, and hearing from each of the communities in which we're meeting, we're putting together what we call working groups, and these are expert-led working groups with experts from across the state agencies as well as organizations and academic partners to put actions that we can, investments that we can make now. So we're going to be identifying what is the key vulnerability and theme, why is that important, and then how do we best protect ourselves and where does that funding come from, right? So it's going to not only map out what we should be worried about, but what can we do. And so each of those working groups is going to be tied directly to a theme, which is going to identify those action items. So, for example, coastal and upland flooding being the common theme, the responses here in Newport County are going to be different than, say, up in Smithfield. Smithfield, we heard a lot about the vulnerability of dams, for example. So looking at those, the safety as well as new climate projections for dams upstream was really critical in that area. Here was how do we protect, say, the Point neighborhood where it's starting to flood chronically. Protecting those neighborhoods and those historic homes and that in those neighborhoods is really critical.
So you mentioned there was six or seven common themes, and we talked about flooding and drinking water. What were some of the other ones that you're seeing across the state so far?
Yeah, so one actually I'll just highlight here for Newport County was coastal erosion, and I think that also speaks to another common theme of changes in natural systems. We're starting to see in the coastal areas of marshland migration. So as sea level is rising, marshes are moving. They provide critical defense to our coastal areas when storms do hit. We're seeing the changes also in upland wetlands also. And then one other common theme that's come up a lot is the changes to the forest composition as well as forest vulnerability. So if you think about it, as we have increasing temperatures, right, that invites pests, the different structure of the forests now become weakened. When we have a storm such as we had a week and a half ago, we have blowdown, and then what does that do? That takes down our grid. So thinking about the changes to our forest and how we manage our forest better for changing climates is also critical. So natural systems is one that has been an interesting finding for us and throughout all these roundtables.
All right. And it's interesting because, I didn't think about the forest one being here on Aquinic Island. I do leave the island, believe it or not, but, it's just not something. But when you bring it up, you sit there and there was just some recent news where all of a sudden areas of the city are seeing, and this could be part of it, more coyotes. It could be with something to do with forests here on the island, or it could be to do with something with rats that maybe areas are seeing an increase of population of and things like that. So all of these themes, what are some that have stuck out in areas that haven't been brought up in others?
Yeah, so
off the top of your head, if you remember any.
Let's see here. So some of the interesting ones, so for example, in Hopkinton, right, we had a great meeting at the Wood Pawcatuck Watershed Association and brought in some local land trust participants as well as the local emergency management agency director. And one of the things that came up there was the interest of the farming community and irrigation and how changes in precipitation as well as the habitat of the rivers are sometimes at direct odds, right? Pulling more water out of the rivers and lakes for the fields reduces the habitat potential for some of these water bodies, which then you think about what the impact is going to be on some of the natural systems. So in Hopkinton, there was a lot of focus on the agricultural community and what a critical component of that is to the economic development of that area, as well as the livelihood and vulnerability of that area moving forward.
Who is sitting at these, who do you guys invite in to these roundtables? Maybe statewide, all of the roundtables. Then locally, do you get organizations such as, I'm trying to think, like a Clean Ocean Access or some of our other Quinick Island nonprofits?
Yeah, so we have found that it's been critical to partner with a local organization or host for each of these meetings. And, you know, that does a few things. One, it builds trust with that, hey, we're convening locally. So it's not the state or it's not the infrastructure bank or it's not just me coming and inviting folks, hey, join us for some conversation that's happening in the state house and it's coming out of Providence. But no, we're directly partnering with these organizations who are leading on these issues locally. So some of our hosts have been the Audubon Society in Smithfield. I mentioned the Wood Pawcatuck Watershed Association. Here in Newport County, we had CCRI Newport. We had the Aquidneck Island Planning Commission. Down in South County, we had the Ocean Chamber, which was really interesting, too, because we brought in the business community, which are impacted, you know, absolutely acutely when storms do hit, especially in areas such as, say, Musquamicut. So we are partnering directly with local hosts, and we have found that that's critical to generating really a varied set of participants. And some of the participants that we've had and the ones that we're targeting, we're very much targeting a grass tops level outreach across all of these 10 meetings. Recognize we're not going to hit everybody. So we're targeting municipal planners, municipal officials, local organization leads and staff. We're also targeting the business community as well as academics. And we recognize that that's a narrow slice, but it's also the folks who have been deeply engaged in these issues for a really long time. So we're starting our conversations this first round at kind of the 50-yard line. We're asking at every one of these meetings, who's not here? Who needs to be here in a follow-up meeting? And so right now we're collecting in each of the geographies, who do we need to go back to? Who do we need to meet? Is it a local community organization? Is it a faith-based group? Those are the folks that are going to be acutely impacted in this area. We'll have follow-up meetings with them, and I'm right now planning those. And, for example, in the Greater Providence area, we held one meeting for almost 70% of the population for the state, right? Recognize that we need to go back and have more meetings. The first one was just a starting point.
And, you know, that's a great point, and you brought up the point section here in Newport. You know, lots of mostly residents out there. I would say the majority of people out there are residents. You know, how do you get their feedback or perhaps on, you know, off of over in King Park, that area floods as well. How do you get those residents' voices or opinions or questions answered?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a challenge. Like, if you're totally open, it's an absolute challenge.
You can't meet with all 1 million residents.
Exactly. You know, we recognize that there's a scale challenge of working across the state. There's many opportunities of working at a state level, right, that that's the reason why the majority of adaptation and climate-related planning happens at a municipal level, because you can kind of wrap your arms around it. It's one government. There's an even broader. Here at the state level, it's really important that we can think about how this works across municipalities. But hitting all of those residents is absolutely difficult. So right now we're having a lot of discussions about how we take all the information that we've received at these roundtables, and then how do we set up a platform for dialogue and communication that maybe doesn't always have to be one-on-one or in-person. So we have a new website that we launched on September 15th in conjunction with the signing of the executive order, and it's www.climatechange.ri.gov, and it really is the hub of all climate change-related work that's happening around the state. So we don't only have municipal and agency-produced reports, but we have ones from organizations as well. So it's a really great hub, and on that website, we're going to be figuring out how to come up with a dialogue box, chat page, whatever the structure ends up becoming, so we can continue the dialogue after the meetings as well as engage in residents that maybe we aren't able to directly talk to in this first 6 months planning exercise.
All right. And we are chatting with Sean O'Rourke today here on What's Up Newport Radio Edition. When we come back, maybe we'll focus on some of the things that were discussed at the Newport Roundtable last week, as well as some things East Bay, South County, all within our listening area. We'll do that. If you do have a question, give us a call, 401-846-1028. 1:30 here on a Tuesday, 56 degrees.
So what are you doing after Thanksgiving?
How about saving a lot of money on some really great furniture? Here you go.
For 3 days, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Ben's Furniture presents their extraordinary clearance sale. Save an extra 20% off every item in the store. 20% off the lowest ticketed price. For 3 days only, save an extra 20% off every sofa and sleep sofa, every mattress, box spring, and futon. An extra 20% off every dinette set, every bedroom set. An extra 20% off every entertainment media stand, every desk and bookcase. Applies to in-stock merchandise on display. No special orders or prior sales included. May not be combined with any other offer. And Ben's has free layaway. Buy now and they'll hold it for Christmas delivery. Don't miss this incredible furniture clearance for just 3 days. This Friday, 9 to 8. Saturday, 9 to 8. Sunday, noon to 5. Ben's Furniture, 166 Thames Street, downtown Newport. Visit their website at bensfern.com.
Start your Black Friday early. Make the smart choice and switch to Sprint and get a new Samsung Galaxy S8, S8 Plus, Note 8, or S8 Active with 50% off your lease. That's right, the hottest Samsung devices 50% off. Plus, with Galaxy Forever, you can upgrade to the latest Galaxy anytime after 12 lease payments. And when you switch to Sprint, you get the best price for unlimited. $25 per month per line for a family of four, plus get a fifth line free. That's 50% off Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. You also get 10 gigabytes of mobile hotspot in HD, so you can stream your favorite holiday movies, music, and games. So stop by your local Sprint store, sprint.com/holidaydeals, or call 1-800-SPRINT-1 to learn more.
Requires 18-month lease and new line savings via monthly credit applied within two bills. Early termination results in remaining balance due after 1/31/19. Pay $38 a line per month with autopay. Excludes taxes, surcharges, and roaming. Compared to Verizon Beyond Unlimited rates, AT&T Unlimited Plus plan and T-Mobile One Plus plan for five lines. Carrier features differ. Coverage and offer not everywhere. Subject to credit and $30 activation fee. Speed maximums, use rules, and restrictions apply.
Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I didn't find that working behind a desk, so for me it was a pretty easy decision to make. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
And welcome back to What's Up Newport Radio Edition here on a Tuesday. I want to remind you that tomorrow we are here live. I will be hosting the open forum at 12 as well as What's Up Newport Radio Edition at 1. And Thursday we'll be off, as well as I hope you are off. It is Thanksgiving, but tune in. We'll have some great holiday programming, and I will also be off on Friday. So tune in. I hear that we will have some live music, not some live music, but we'll have a live DJ in here playing some great jazz tunes for you, and etc. So that's what our week looks like. Again, tomorrow we will have John Edwards coming all the way down from Tiverton, and he will be—he is the vice president of Tiverton Town Council, and we will be chatting with him about everything going on in Tiverton, especially the Newport Grand of Tiverton Casino, and much more. So we'll find out all the latest that's happening up there. And Sean O'Rourke is here. Sean, have you been up to? Have you guys covered the Tiverton area yet?
So we are holding an East Bay roundtable. That's going to be on December 6th, and that'll take into some of that area, and also we had some Tiverton residents as well down here at the Newport County meeting last Friday as well.
That is a great point. If somebody missed the roundtable that was at CCRI last Friday, can they still attend one of the upcoming ones that are coming?
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for flagging that. So I mentioned the website earlier, www.climatechange.ri.gov. That has all of the upcoming roundtables, the next four that we have scheduled, listed on the website, and would welcome anyone to kind of come across geography to talk about some of the challenges that you're seeing. We recognize that not everyone always lives and works all in one region, so would love to have the input of many. So if you see one that you would like to attend, please join.
Pack a lunch, maybe stop at Federal Hill, you know, just plan a trip, have dinner on that side of the state,
exactly,
to support another town or city's economy. And if you're just joining us, Sean O'Rourke is the Director of Stormwater and Resiliency for the State of Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank, as well as Chief Resilience Officer for the State of Rhode Island. And I was mentioning to Sean during the break that it's just, it's a big topic to try to understand what all of you guys are trying to do.
Yep. It's a really big issue, and there's no debate. We mentioned earlier that this is not about debating why climate change is happening. We're using the best available science in terms of projections, and we're also using what we're already seeing, what the measurements are telling us, and not just the modeling, but the actual measurements that we're seeing that are really put our infrastructure, our environment, our people at risk in the really short term. So we recognize that we're not going to be able to solve everything. We're not going to be able to solve climate change between now and July when this strategy needs to be delivered to the governor. But we're trying to identify what are the priority actions that we can do right now, that we can really start to move the needle, and what investments that we can make across the state from coast to upland. And that's really the core priority of this strategy. And then we recognize that it doesn't end in July, but that we're going to be working towards implementation and better coordination across municipalities, as well as, most importantly, across state agencies. You know, agencies are doing so much already. We want to make sure that we stack those limited resources and dollars and kind of can start singing off the same song sheet.
And Sean, as well as the governor, were at the Newport County Resiliency Roundtable at CCRI Newport last Friday and discussed key actions and investments to make Newport County and Rhode Island's residents, economy, infrastructure, health systems, and natural resources more resilient to the impact of climate change. What were some of the things that you walked away with last Friday from CCRI with?
Yeah, so one of the kind of a list of four themes that have emerged, and we're still sifting through all the data. We had about 75-plus people there, five different breakout groups. So there was a lot of voices and input. So we're sifting through all that right now.
And remind people just the types of people that were there. Who was representing our little island here?
Yeah, great question. So we had everything from municipal planners from around Newport County. We had environmental leaders from organizations. We had a lot of residents as well, business owners from across the county. So it was kind of a grasstops level outreach. As I mentioned, it was also hosted by the Quinnipiac Island Planning Commission, who did a really terrific job in helping to get the word out and make sure that we had a really good attendance and a broad cross-section of here, folks from Newport County. And it also provided us, I think, a really interesting cross-section of perspectives as well. As I mentioned, those five different facilitators all took a different perspective on how they wanted to facilitate two breakout discussions. One of them was Representative Lauren Carson from District 75 here in the Newport area. And she did a great job of really understanding, you know, how can state government, you know, be an active player in this work. And she's been a great champion of these efforts for a while.
And the feedback that was received at the meeting from everybody, what was that, and how do you guys plan on using it?
Yeah, so for us, those five groups, as I mentioned, we're still sifting through the information to make sure that we can sort of quantify what we found. But coastal erosion was an issue that we heard quite a bit. You know, the beach access in the coastal areas is so critical not only to the quality of life and of Newport County, but also an economic driver, right? And a big part of all this work is an underlying economic development and economic driver for our state. A couple of the others were the vulnerability of the drinking water supply, which we heard loud and clear across all five groups, and that came through as through our prioritization exercise, was just vulnerability of the drinking water supply and small suppliers. Emergency preparedness, as I mentioned, you know, we only have a few ways on and off the island here. Should we be better prepared to either shelter here or do we leave? Making sure that there's consistency of messaging, that our facilities have continuity of essential services. So this, if a storm does hit, what do we do? And that brought up the next piece of education. There's also a lack of consistency of education across the state. And we heard here in Newport, while there's a lot of really, I think, well-educated and the planning boards are terrific, elected officials are really up on this. We have great state representation here, all the way up to our congressional delegation. But there's inconsistencies in terms of like K-12 education, and we're starting to see that across the state with not only planning boards, but also how do we best prepare our next generation of climate leaders so that we can start to move the ball forward.
And speaking of education, and I'm just thinking of when you mention storm emergency routes, with the amount of seasonal residents that we have here, or the amount of tourists that we have here in the summer, is how do you tell somebody that, you know, comes from California for a weekend trip, and then all of a sudden we get a storm, you know, the communication of what they should do, all of a sudden there's a hurricane.
Absolutely. I don't have the exact answer for what that would be now, but I think that you put your finger on a perfect example of an action item, right? Other states like, you know, New York, for example, has done, I think it's called Get to High Ground, a really interesting methodology for how they lay out signs to very clearly depict ways out of neighborhoods. There's also, you know, other places have shown the importance of evacuation routes in multiple languages as well. That if everything's always in English, you're inherently, you know, missing a big segment of many of the populations across Rhode Island. So making sure we have multiple languages. Also, one of the other ideas that has come up, and it came up in the Newport County Roundtable, was if we have during emergencies with those evacuation routes, could we have lighted routes that were, say, on using renewables or backup generators, so that all of the evacuation routes always had power and could actually light the way to wherever they were trying to get. So a couple of those ideas, and those are inherently across, you know, agency also. You have DOT, you have Rhode Island Environmental Emergency Management Agency, and others, right? They're starting to stack those investments.
How much, I'm sure you guys sat down, and I don't want to tell you what you did or didn't do, because I don't know, but I'm sure you guys sat down and knew about a lot of the things that is coming up at meetings. Have there been surprises?
Yeah, so a little bit about how we've been functioning and structuring these meetings. So we learned throughout all six, we've learned how to make each one better. One of the things we heard in the first couple meetings that we held was, there's already been so much done, why are we starting fresh? And that really was not the goal, was not to start fresh, was to build on all the work that has already been done across the state. So what we're doing now is doing literature reviews and talking with agencies and municipal officials about what is all the literature and studies that shows what the vulnerabilities are right now. So we're pre-populating lists in each of these meetings about what are those climate impacts, and then what are the assets that are impacted, so that we can then ask the participants in two different conversations, hey, what is on here that's most important to you, as well as what should be prioritized? So that really, and then also what is missing as well. And that's been the critical piece of, like, what is missing on these lists? Some of the surprises have been just the, and it's maybe not a surprise, but it's been come through loud and clear, is the quality of life in our historic neighborhoods and connection to the water is so critical. So being able to ensure that we have this long-term connection to our water, our bays, and our oceans is absolutely essential to our long-term viability as a state, as well as the economic development of our state.
Well, you look at Newport, one of the busiest sections of Newport is downtown Bowens Wharf area, and that has, you know, Landing Restaurant. You know, I was thinking about this earlier when you were talking about businesses that have impact. You know, when there's a high moon, high tide, or a super moon, high tide, harvest moon, high tide, their first floor is underwater.
Right.
You know, and it's important. It's things like that where that message is important to gather and capture, but it's just finding a way to capture that from everybody that's been impacted by what's going on.
Absolutely. And that goes from businesses to critical facilities. You know, I was just having a conversation this morning with the Department of Environmental Management of wastewater treatment facilities, and they've done some great work at DEM about looking at all of the, I think there's 19 wastewater treatment facilities around the state, looking at all of them for adaptation measures and what their risk in terms of vulnerability for a changing climate is. They're inherently placed at the bottom of the hill, right, because they want to utilize gravity. That also places them in some of the most vulnerable areas. So understanding now what has already been done across these agencies to better provide awareness, but now how do we catalyze that awareness into action in terms of investment? And that really is the core of the strategy.
And to put it in, I think, my very simple mind, I picture that this group is like a Facebook group, and all of the groups that are doing work in Rhode Island, and all the people that have opinions or interests in this, all are members of that group, but you guys are just hosting the discussion as well as trying to get everybody to work together and know what everybody's doing.
Yes. Yeah, we want to be that Facebook wall, you know, and where everyone can be putting their info up. And recognize, as I mentioned earlier, we're not going to catch everybody on this first outreach of 10 meetings, but we want to make sure that we're asking the question in each of these, who's not here, right, so that we can have those follow-up discussions. And as I've said a number of times already, there has already been so much work done. This is not starting fresh. September 15th, this executive order and the strategy was about standing on the shoulders of so much work that has already been done. And so this first pass is to say, hey, northwest corner of the state, Scituate, you know, that meeting we're going to have is just as important as talking with folks that are down in South County who have had champions in other ways, and have had, in many respects, a larger megaphone because of the impacts that we've seen. But we want to make sure this is a truly statewide outreach.
And organize it all and then plan actions of how you guys can all work together.
Exactly. Yeah. And so this first pass is about identifying priority themes. And then we're going to be coming back with, hey, here's what we heard. Did we hear you all correctly? What did we miss? And let's prioritize, and then let's put Let's put expert-level working groups on trying to identify those actions.
We'll talk about the rest of the first round of roundtables, as well as maybe second. We'll definitely get how you can give feedback to Sean and crew, and we'll do all of that and anything else we missed on What's Up Noop Radio Edition when we come back after this.
You stuff the turkey, we'll stuff the paper. Celebrate Thanksgiving with the Providence Journal and the biggest newspaper of the year, containing valuable Black Friday offers and over 40 sales flyers to your favorite stores. Whether you're shopping for clothing, toys, jewelry, or electronics, the Providence Journal has the best deals around. The supersized Thanksgiving Day newspaper is available November 23rd in home delivery or at newsstands. Not a subscriber? Call 401-277-7600 now to subscribe to the Providence Journal.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Berman, and I'm the Executive Director of the Southern Rhode Island Chamber of Commerce, where we have been helping businesses grow since 1933. Whether you are a seaside restaurant, a contractor, or an attorney, our chamber has the tools to help your business flourish. With 4 networking events every month, we give you ample opportunities to expand your network. You can visit us at 230 Old Tower Hill Road in Wakefield, call us at 401-783-2801, or visit us online at srichamber.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
DUI defense, divorce, misdemeanor or felony criminal charges, child custody disputes. If you or someone you know are facing such legal challenges, then put experience on your side and have the Flanagan Law Offices help you defend your rights. Frank Flanagan is a veteran trial attorney and a Navy JAG veteran who's been helping individuals in criminal courts and family courts for over 20 years. Frank Flanagan can help you. The Flanagan Law Offices are located with Joe Houlihan's old firm of Houlihan, Manahan, Morrissey, and Kyle at 195 Broadway in Newport, at the building many of you may remember as the former Broadway Post Office. If you're in a legal battle, you need a fighter in your corner. The Flanagan Law Office can fight for you. Call Frank Flanagan at 849-3337 or check out their website at lawyernewportri.com. DUI defense, divorce, misdemeanor or felony criminal charges, child custody disputes. The Flanagan Law Offices can protect your rights.
Final segment here on a Tuesday, 148, 56 degrees, looking like we're going to see a high of 58 if we haven't seen it already. Tonight, increasing clouds with a little rain towards dawn, low of 52. Let's jump ahead to tomorrow, cloudy and breezy with rain tapering off, high of 55. Thanksgiving Day, mostly sunny, high of 42, a low on Thursday night of 34. So mostly sunny Thanksgiving Day. Can't really beat that. And for those shoppers, of course, shop local on Friday and on Small Business Saturday. Sunshine and a few clouds, not flu. High of 47. So we're looking at a pretty dry weekend. Saturday, of course, Friday night, we have the Bowens Wharf boat parade. So that will be happening, a great little event, the head down. And it's actually, last year was freezing, literally, but it was just as cold as could be. Looks like it will have a pretty nice night, low Thursday night of 34, so bundle up. We've been chatting with Sean O'Rourke, of Director of Stormwater and Resiliency for the Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank, and we've been chatting about the roundtable that took place here. There's some roundtables that are coming up. There are, four more coming up? I guess there's three more coming up because Newport was number six. Where are those coming up, Sean?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So we have, as I mentioned, we have only 10 of these roundtables across the state. We have the next three planned. The next one's on November 28th up in Scituate. That's going to be hosted by the Northern Rhode Island Conservation District. December 6th, we have one in Bristol, hosted by the Audubon Environmental Education Center, and that's going to be Barrington, Bristol, Warren, kind of the East Bay community. And then December 7th, out on Block Island, we're thrilled to be able to talk with our friends out on Block Island. That's co-hosted by the Nature Conservancy. And then we're working on trying to set one up in the West Greenwich, East Greenwich area as well.
And a reminder that residents, businesses, business owners, whatever it may be, you're welcome at any of these. You certainly don't have to show proof of residency, right, or whatever it may be, yeah, to get in. Usually, I know for Newport, there was a pre-registration, so want to make sure you get over to the website. What's the website again?
Yeah, it's www.climatechange.ri.gov. And as I mentioned earlier, it's just a really fantastic hub of of information about all the climate change activities around mitigation as well as adaptation that are happening across the state. Host of reports from state agencies as well as other nonprofit partners that are doing some really terrific work across the state.
So you get all this information, and then you start a second round.
Yeah, so the second round is going to be a more informal round. So this first 10 is, you know, partnering with local organizations and hosting meetings, having invites. The second round is about identifying who wasn't at the first 10 that we really want to make sure that we have a discussion with. As I was mentioning earlier, you know, Providence, for example, Metro Providence area, about 70% of the population for the state. We want to be able to make sure we go back and have these follow-up discussions. So whether that's getting on the agenda of a local planning commission, whether that's getting on the agenda of any faith-based group or community organization, so we can ensure we increase the level of dialogue about what they're feeling locally in their neighborhood, in their community, and then we can measure that against what we've been hearing statewide. So we have kind of two levels of input, one, a true grasstops level engagement, and then a series of follow-up, more deeper dive conversations with community organizations across the state.
And then you get all this information. If I understood the last 50 minutes correctly, you make sure that nothing's not being covered. I would assume that if there's a big gap where there's just this issue that keeps coming up that nobody's working on, that's right, kind of an emergency one.
Yep.
But then you really put all of this feedback and make sure that it's action is being taken on it.
Exactly. And what I've been working on deeply outside of hosting all these meetings is trying to collect as well as develop a quantifiable method for how do we assess all the information we heard, right? Recognize that there's a ton of ideas. How do we package that into themes that are actionable, as well as then stand behind the ones that we pick, recognizing that we're not going to be able to hit everything. So one of the groups that we're working really closely on trying to develop that methodology is the Science and Technical Advisory Board, which is a part of what's called the EC4. And the EC4 is a collection of state agency directors that is chaired by Director Janet Coit out of the Department of Environmental Management, has directors from across all state agencies that are really the kind of part of the steering committee for this strategy moving forward. And so that Science and Technology Advisory Board has been really helpful in putting together a methodology for how we take all this information and then boil it down into a series of themes that then we can drive action out of.
So lots of the state agencies are working together, believe it or not, despite what you see out there in the world. So lots of information there. How about for somebody that, you know, if there's a business owner, maybe a small business owner on the waterfront here in Newport or a farm owner in Foster, Gloucester, how can they make sure their voice is heard? Who should they be calling to make sure their message gets to you?
Yeah, great question. So I would say start with the website. There is a contact box on the website that actually goes right now to the Department of Environmental Management, but also comes to me. I would say start there. And my contact information is also on that website. I also would say, you know, become engaged with your local conservation commission, with your local planning boards. I'm interacting with each of those in the municipalities across the state, and we're finding the municipalities are really starting to lead on many of these issues, and they're also on the front lines of the investments that we're going to be able to make moving forward. So we can raise the awareness locally. The strategy is one method of communication and awareness. We also need to be making this a better awareness campaign across all of our municipalities directly as well.
How often, I'm sure they're invited or maybe they're not, how often are senators, representatives, city council, town council members participating in these discussions?
Yeah, we've had a couple at each of them. They've all been invited. As you can imagine, the schedules are always really tricky to navigate. They've been in all of our state representatives have been included in terms of invites to each of these roundtables across the state. We had a great representation here. As I mentioned, Rep. Carson was one of the facilitators from at the meeting last Friday. But yeah, they've been engaged, and we're already starting to think about, hey, what are some of the legislative priorities that we can look at next session?
And the governor was there last Friday.
Yes.
What did, I don't know if she mentioned anything to you or to anyone else, but what did she walk away with from this meeting with, you know?
I think she walked away with knowing that there is a heck of a lot of work that's already underway, that we're catalyzing action, and that 75 people came out in the middle of the day on a Friday to really talk about and be champions for these issues is really critical, right? And I think that showed that, you know, the leadership that she's showing, as well as all of the other agencies and municipalities are showing, is starting to really impact and affect change. And so I was really thrilled that there was such an interesting diversity of perspectives that were in the room and that she got to hear from.
Let's, I guess, just hit on one of them. So flooding, obviously, probably one of the top main things people are thinking of when it comes to climate change, resiliency. What are we doing? What's being done, and what do you think we might be able to do in the very near future here?
Yeah, so two ideas that come to mind immediately. One is, I mentioned earlier, the vulnerability of our state dams. Right now, we're doing a whole assessment. Department of Environmental Management is doing a whole assessment of our the vulnerability of dams across the state and starting to take into account not just their vulnerability now, but also with the increase of precipitation with climate change. So that's one big flooding challenge that also brings into economic development issues as well as, say, even loss of life. So that's one particular issue that we're starting to look at very acutely is the vulnerability of our state dams. The other one is just managing water where it falls. So Newport has done some really interesting work about what we call green infrastructure, right? Green infrastructure is about when the rain hits the ground, it doesn't go off into a catch basin or a storm drain and then taken somewhere with a series of pipes, but is actually infiltrated on the street, in the street. That reduces the amount of wet weather flows that need to be treated at a centralized plant. It provides great multiple benefits as well, you know, benefits to the community, urban air quality issues, as well as just urban greening. And so those are two issues that we're starting to look at about how do we manage our wet weather flows from a hard engineering solution, but also from more of a soft engineering solution such as green infrastructure.
And I imagine some of it, it's not all action. Some of it's reaction, like when you mention emergencies or flooding. You know, we can't stop the water from coming higher. People would argue with me with that, but for a lot of things, it's reaction, what we do when something happens.
Exactly. So one of this is preparing ourselves to better to be prepared when something does hit, but also preparing ourselves to how do we bounce back, and I like to say bounce forward more effectively, right? So we recognize we know where we are now, and that's part of what we're calling the resiliency gap. This resiliency gap is when we know where we are now, we're starting to learn about all the vulnerabilities across the state. We're now putting a stake in the ground about where we want to be in terms of adaptation and resiliency in the future. What are those needs and resources that are critical to move us forward? And that's really the core message of this adaptation strategy. And we're hearing we need sustainable funding and financing models. We need better coordinated data, right? These are outside of themes. These are just needs and resources. And we're cataloging all of those as well to be able to not only just withstand, but also bounce forward and move our state forward to be a more resilient our environment.
Well, hopefully we helped people understand this issue a little bit more and what your office is doing. Sometimes with government, it's not always easy to understand what that long title or what it means. So I really appreciate all the information today. The website one more time.
Yeah, www.climatechange.ri.gov.
Excellent. And several more meetings coming up. Go to the website, find out where they are, participate, reach out to your local representative, reach out to your local here on Aquidneck Island. It's AIPC, Aquidneck Island Planning Commission. You can reach out to and you can provide them with more information. You know, if you don't reach out, so they don't know that your business is flooding every high tide or once a week. You know, things like that is very important information to find out where the water and what areas. You know, that's why we know the point is flooding because they made it very public. So lots of great information. I want to thank you for coming in today, Sean.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You are
great
welcome. Yes. And, we will, put this podcast up available on WADK.com as well as on WhatsUpNoop.com. And, we will do that, in just a short while. So if you missed anything, you can catch it there. That's, going to do it for us today. And again, it is 56 degrees here in Newport. It is a minute before 2 p.m. We'll be back tomorrow. Please tune in. I will be on the open forum at noon. And then we will be at 1 p.m. We'll be joined by John Edwards from Tiverton Town Council, who is on a vice president of the council. We'll chat then. Have a good day. Clark Harwood's next.
This is your hometown.
Your friendly officers here at Arrest the Pest serve and protect area homes, families, and businesses. Arrest the Pest has been providing the fix since 1986. No matter the pest, it ends in arrest. Arrest the Pest today. Call 738-3766. Pests, you detest them, and we arrest them. Hey, who loves you, baby? ArrestThePest.com. 738-37